Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So, Canto 7, Chapter 10, continued in 7th Canto, Part 3 of the previous versions of the Bhagavatam, the three-volume set in the 7th Canto. And this is still Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees. And we heard that in the previous purport that the Acharyas consider that amongst the Mahajans, Prahlad is the best. That's quite so that really does again make these prayers by Prahlad Maharaj and his mood and activities very extremely important within the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Before we start that section, I just had a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Prahlad Maharaj asked Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad Maharaj asked the benediction to Lord for his father.
Mm.
And Lord Narsingdev replies that you should perform your perform the ceremony, which is the ceremony, Shraddha ceremony for him. So that, but I'm just wondering, he was actually they were Jai and Vijay, and then at the same time, so they had to take three births anyways.
Mm.
But but since he was killed by the Lord, he didn't get liberation. He still had to take the birth. So I'm just trying to understand what is that the devotee's desire, or his devotee's desire precedes, overrides what Lord wants, because it was the curse of the four Kumaras that brought them down and they took the three births. But usually we see from Krishna Leela that all the demons that were killed by Krishna, they
Hiranyakashipu considered himself God, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, which is sort of another way of not acknowledging the personality of Godhead. Sanatana Goswami discusses that in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. You know, according to whatever degree one acknowledges praises or offers some service to the personality of Godhead, that will determine, even if one is killed by the Lord, that will determine their next destination.
Mm-hmm.
So successively, from Hiranyakashipu, etc., to Ravana, to Sisupal and Dantavakra, there was acknowledgements either of his form, his personality. Even though they were envious, they still acknowledge that there was acknowledgement that here is the personality of Godhead. So the more it was acknowledged, then the greater the spiritual benediction, in the sense that ultimately then Sisupal entered into the body of Lord Krishna.
But we also see that Kamsa was, I think Kamsa also thought of Krishna in envious way all the time, and Hiranyakashipu had the same mood, but still they achieved different destinations.
Yep, and
and also considering that he was being killed with the nails, I was just comparing with how Lord Narsingdev also touched the head of Prahlad Maharaj and he was able to speak prayers, but by the touch of his nails, which was because of his anger probably, he's still not achieving the destination that other demons have achieved.
Yeah, Yeah, so it's discussed in the Brihad Bhagavatam Rita. And of course, Sisipal also was here, you know, Hiranyakashipu, who was killed by Lord Narasimhadeva. Sisipal ultimately was killed by Krishna and in Mathura. So, you know, there are different factors as to where they were killed, especially being killed by Krishna himself, and then different aspects of the mentality, which ultimately allowed there to be liberation. So otherwise, you know, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, they didn't get the liberation immediately, but they become very wealthy, very prosperous, very powerful. Then, as you know, Ravana and Kumbhakarna, again, they didn't get you know, the liberation, but they did, you know, they were within the realms of Krishna's dharma, you know, and killed by Krishna himself. So, and then liberation. So, you know, there was a gradual progression, depending on which form of the Lord killed him, where they were killed, and you know, whether they acknowledge God. I mean, Hiranyakashipu thought he was God. they acknowledge God, you know, there was some appreciation or some, you know, rendering of. So in this case here, you know, there's also, you know, each thing that is done by the Lord is significant. So in this case, that the Shraddha ceremony is performed, that's significant. You know, being done by Prahlad Maharaj. In some cases, the Lord does it himself, I think, in the form of. Did Ram do the Shraddha for Ravana? Yeah, so, you know, each pastime there was a progressive. You know, the Lord was doing something more for them. So it was Ram, he actually personally did the Shraddha.
Yeah.
But the whole topic is discussed. There's one purport there, the commentary of Sanatana Goswami on particular verse, where he discusses all of those particular demons and others and why they stopped at that particular point without either getting liberation. Why? So it is there. I can try and... I've printed it out. I may have it sitting at home somewhere if I ever get home. And I haven't been home for a few days. You know, I'll try and bring that in. I'll try and rustle that up. I think I printed it out and put it there. And if I can find it easily, I'll bring it in maybe next week and can have a look at that. Yeah. It's very nice, very good explanation. But so there are factors. So the factor here is that the Lord organized for the Shraddha to be done. It was done by Prahlad. In the case of Ravana, it was done by the Lord himself. You know, so very similar. So it's not. So, you know, the fact that the role that Prahlad plays is that, having been killed, because he was killed by the Lord, gradually, you know, the opportunity will come over some lifetimes to become liberated, immediately. But because Prahlad is his soul, a pure devotee, then, you know, 21 generations of family members will be liberated. So that is the benediction of being associated with Prahlad. And You know, such a devotee as Prahlad Maharaj performing one's shraddha certainly does influence. You know, when a devotee prays for someone, then you know, certainly the Lord takes that into consideration. But even before Prahlad's done the shraddha, the Lord already knows Prahlad's prayers towards his father. He already knows what he already knows. You know, the benediction. He's assuring Prahlad, you know. Prahlad asks a question so that, you know, others could understand the Lord's intention, but the Lord already knows the prayers that Prahlad offers in that Shraddha ceremony, and he's already given the benediction before he's done the ritual. You know, and so it certainly does affect the outcome.
So, Prabhu, just within the same purport, Prabhupada also mentioned about Madhu and Kaitava. And I haven't read about particularly about this. So I was trying to find this. I couldn't find a lot of detail on what exactly that pastime happened and how they were killed by the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't know what destination they achieved after they were killed.
Mm-hmm.
Would you know about this?
Madhu and Kaitava?
Yeah.
There isn't a lot discussed about it in the Bhagavatam. But I think Brahma was a little tired, a little sleepy, and he might have yawned, and they took that opportunity to steal the Vedas. And Hayagriva appeared and killed the both of them. And,
I've been reading various sources, and it seemed like Hayagriva only went to get the Vedas because they dumped the Vedas inside the ocean, and they were quite proud of the benediction that they had got, that they would never be killed, because when they came out of the ear wax of Lord Vishnu, they sort of floated around, and Lakshmi Devi was pleased by their struggle. They were trying to find where we should go, and because of that that's when they got benediction that they will be dying on their own will instead. So Lord Vishnu and Lord Vishnu saw them, and there was some conversation between them, and they were proud that what benediction do you want? They were asking to Lord Vishnu, and then Lord Vishnu said, just die. And there are other stories where Lord Vishnu, actually they had fought for 10,000 years, 40,000 years, and so I couldn't find really a genuine source as to what had actually happened in this past time. Because I'm just wondering, because Madhu and Kaitapadya mentioned, but I'm also trying to consider, is Prabhupada trying to specifically mention about, because he has mentioned that they were their demons also observed ritualistic ceremonies so that these demons could return home back to God.
Madhusudan, shall we find Madhusudan in the Bhagavad Gita?
Madhusudan, yes.
In Mukunda Mala also, the Lord is addressed as Madhu Kaitavare, specifically.
Yeah.
One who killed, you know.
Yeah, the killer of the,
yeah. As just speaking, that's what I was referencing.
Madhusudan, the Gita, anyone?
Yeah, Madhusudan, yeah, different
thing. Because this one doesn't have an index of the words. Is it 6th chapter?
Yeah, his name is in the 115 purport. First chapter, 15th verse.
Yeah, 115.
His name is Madhusudana because he killed the demon named Madhu.
So he killed him.
Yeah.
And anywhere else does it come up? Just a moment. Yeah, so he is described as the killer of Madhu.
Yeah, it's again in the 2-1 purport, second Javakas, it's again the same thing. Lord Krishna killed the demon Madhu.
Madhu, yeah. Mm. So there's the authentic reference.
Bhagavad Gita. 8-2 also.
8-2?
8 chapter.
Yeah. What did you say?
Same.
So killed the demon. Yeah. Three times. So that's authentic. He killed him.
Yeah.
And you know, there's not much in the Bhagavatam, but there is a reference in the Bhagavatam. Madhu and Kaitava were killed by the Lord. I think there's one reference in there. If you look up those two words, Madhu and Kaitava. Yeah.
In the Mugandamala, 25th verse, the enemy of Madhu and Kaitava.
Yeah.
The Lord is at the
So my understanding is from there that they definitely killed them.
So as a in high grief form.
In as high a griever, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm. Is high a griever one of the 10 incarnations? No. Where is he mentioned?
Bhagavatam, many purports high griever is high griever is mentioned in Bhagavatam.
Can you find where Hayagriva, Madhu and Kaitava were mentioned together?
Yeah, my dear Lord, this is the 7th chapter. Oh yeah, here this is actually called. Here Bhagavatam is written. Mm. It is very clearly mentioned as killed.
Mm.
My dear Lord, this is the same last chapter. Yeah.
Yeah, in the 7th canto. Yeah, that's what it's called.
It's mentioned as killed.
Second canto.
My dear Lord, when you appeared as Hayagriva with the head of a horse, you killed two demons known as Madhu and Kaitava, who are full of the mode of passion and ignorance. Then you delivered the Vedic knowledge to Lord Brahma. Mm. For this reason, all great saints accept your form as transcendental, untouched by material qualities.
Yeah, that's your thought. Usually when it comes up, it always says that he killed him as higher grievance.
Mm. Okay.
So that was intelligent. So.
Mm. And other places in the 10th canto, in the prayers of Akrura, I offer my obeisances to you, the cause of the creation, Lord Matsya, who swam about in the ocean of dissolution, to Lord Hayagriva, the killer of Madhu and Kaitava, to the immense tortoise and who supported Mandara mountain, and to the boar incarnation who enjoyed lifting the
Kakrura one by one. Yeah, so always mentioned that he killed them. Hayagriva killed them. You know, sometimes there are pastimes that are connected. They're not necessarily, some of the Puranas tell a part of the story, which is suitable for those readers. Sometimes if we hear part of a story, we may get the wrong impression, and of course that's a good thing about the Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada, is that you always hear the main thing you need to know. Hayagriva killed them. There are different pastimes, but in the long run he just killed them. But it's there in the Bhagavad Gita as well. Mm. So,
I didn't understand the analogy in verse 39 that is mentioned. Not only Shishupal Dantavakra, but also many other kings who acted as enemies of Krishna attained salvation at the time of death. Because they thought of the Lord, they received spiritual bodies in the forms the same as His. Just as worms captured by black drone obtain the same type of body as the drone.
Means that they may be killed by the drone, but because they've been thinking of the drone, in the next birth, they take birth as drone.
Oh, okay. Right. Black drone is a bee, right?
Yeah, a very nasty one.
Similar analogy is given somewhere else in the Bible.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of meditation.
Yeah.
They change the form.
Next one.
Yeah. Okay. It's like the same analogy we use when iron gets in contact with fire, it obtains the same form. If it's in contact for a long time. So, it's a good one.
Yeah, the meditation. So it affects the consciousness, and then especially at the time of death.
Is there a similar analogy in the beginning of the canto? Because of that absorption part.
That's
that
right.
Yeah.
And that may also be in the Bhagavad Gita as well. I think that, that which would be in the 8th chapter. There's a slight twist to it. There's two examples of it, but you can change in this life, or you can change when you get your next body. You know, so for instance, devotees. They literally change, and in this life, therefore, one who chants the holy names of the Lord without offense becomes qualified in this life to perform Vedic yajnas. They don't have to take birth again, nor do they have to perform the purificatory processes. To become a Brahmana, they consider they're already purified to be able to perform Vedic yajnas in this lifetime. Whereas a Brahmana, even though born in a Brahmana family, still, unless they perform the different purificatory processes, they're still not qualified to actually perform Vedic yajnas. So, did you find that? No. There's another example there in the 8th chapter. So, sometimes it's mentioned in such a way that, one can change, one's body in this lifetime, and sometimes it's mentioned in such a way that one changes body in the next lifetime. And I think using the same example.
The example of caterpillar, the butterfly, is
doing
the same.
Yeah.
Same
yeah.
Line.
Yeah.
The same
line. Mm. In Bhagavad Gita, that's there as well. I think in the purport. So, here, of course, what happens is that a personality like
8-8.
Personality like Sisipal, Hiranyakashipu, so many demons. Prahlad is given the example that they're meditating upon the Supreme Lord, and the net result is they attain the spiritual qualities of the Lord. Either entering into the impersonal Brahman, or actually attaining a spiritual body like that of the Lord, Sarupya Mukti. So in 8.8 of the Bhagavad Gita, it says that the mind is fickle and therefore it is necessary to engage the mind by force to think of Krishna. So this is Srila Prabhupada's purport. One example often given is that of the caterpillar that thinks of becoming a butterfly and so is transformed into a butterfly in the same life. Similarly, if we constantly think of Krishna, it is certain that at the end of our lives we shall have the same bodily constitution as Krishna. So, ultimately, the full transformation is that one actually achieves the spiritual body, the spiritual form.
It's just that this, we see the caterpillars changing into butterfly every day all around us.
Yeah.
We just don't see people turning into the spiritual. That's why we have to...
Well, we do actually. That's what we're saying. That's what Prahlad said. That if one chants the holy name of the Lord, if one is qualified in bhakti, despite whatever body that they were born with, they actually, in this lifetime, they attain the body of a brahmana who is qualified to perform, they're purified to perform Vedic yajñas without any further purification. So yeah, that's happened in this life.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
that's understand it that way.
That's better than
the
brahmana.
There's
no
difference. Yeah. For visual eyes, there's no difference visibly seen.
Even if they change also, you cannot see in the mundane eyes. You can't see spiritual things. Even if someone gets a spiritual body. Yeah.
In the 7th canto, 1st chapter, a grass worm confined in a hole of a wall by a bee always thinks of the bee in fear and enmity and later becomes a bee simply because of such remembrance.
Yeah.
Similarly, if the conditioned soul somehow or other thinks of Krishna, who is Sachidananda Vigraha, they will become free from their sins, whether thinking of him as their worshipable Lord or an enemy. Because of constantly thinking of him, they will regain their spiritual bodies.
So they regain their spiritual bodies, and as we said, in this life, we do see it because although, for instance, we might say we put the iron rod in the fire, but we don't see it becoming fire, it's still an iron rod.
Yeah.
That's what you, but it acts just like fire.
Correct.
So, and that we can see.
We can see that.
And what Prahlad is saying, the same thing. You can see they have the material body, but it's not acting like a material body anymore. It's acting like a spiritual body. So we can see. How is that? That they're qualified to, you know, perform Vedic yajñas, even though born in the family of demons. So their body is acting spiritually, even though we don't see that the body has changed. So you can see that an iron rod, it's still an iron rod. You want to see it's just the iron rod is gone, it's just flames. No, but it's acting like fire, it doesn't have to change. The full transformation, of course, it comes in the next life where one achieves the spiritual body. So you do actually see it by degrees and then the full transformation. So that is an example there. So the transformation is in this life by spiritualization, and in the next life by spiritualization of this body, and the next life by actually being awarded one's original spiritual body. And then, there is an example.
This is full purport, everything in that book.
What's that?
This is...
Everything is there.
Yeah.
I know, yeah. You know, the other day, someone asked the other day I was listening to a lecture. You sort of get the impression that you're talking to Prabhupada. But Prabhupada was giving a lecture in 1968 in Montreal, and the lady asked that, you know, how can you say that God is mine? And Prabhupada answered that, you know, in different ways. You know, the difference is if you say God is mine, it doesn't exclude anyone else from also saying that. Because he's spiritual. And then he quoted Bhagavad Gita again, where Krishna says that the living entity is mine and I am his. So that means that Krishna saying I am his means that we can say he's mine. That's in Bhagavad Gita. He just quoted those couple of lines from one of the verses. Everything is in the Gita. Everything we're reading from the Bhagavatam, it's all there, the principles. And of course, that's what we want to see is, you know, realization. So when Prabhupada answered that question, you know, we might think, well, there's no sloka in the Bhagavad Gita answering that question, you see? But actually, there is. You know, the realization of what Krishna is actually saying, you know, if Krishna is saying, you know, I am his, that means that we can say he's mine. Yeah. So that's the realization, and that's what we want. We don't want to churn out, Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhavi, Bhakti Vedanta graduates who can quote the verses, hundreds of verses, without realization. Rather, you want one devotee, at least, who actually has some realization of, you know. So we begin here. Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees. Narada Muni continued, "My dear Maharaj Yudhisthira, all of you, the Pandavas, are extremely fortunate. For the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, lives in your palace just like a human being. Great saintly persons know this very well, and therefore they constantly visit this house." So actually, just where we left off in our conversation there, we take off in the Bhagavatam. So in this purport, after hearing about the activities of Prahlad Maharaj, a pure devotee should be very anxious to follow in his footsteps. But such a devotee might be disappointed, thinking that not every devotee can come to the standard of Prahlad Maharaj. This is the nature of a pure devotee. He always thinks himself to be the lowest, to be incompetent and unqualified. Thus, after hearing the narration of Prahlad Maharaj's activities, Maharaj Yudhisthira, who was on the same standard of devotional service as Prahlad, might have been thinking of his own humble position. Narada Muni, however, could understand Maharaj Yudhisthira's mind, and therefore he immediately encouraged him by saying that the Pandavas were not less fortunate. They are as good as Prahlad Maharaj, because although Lord Narasimhadev appeared for Prahlad, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his original form as Krishna was always living with the Pandavas. Although the Pandavas, because of the influence of Krishna's yoga maya, could not think of their fortunate position, every saintly person, including the great sage Narada, could understand it. And therefore, they constantly visited Maharaj Yudhisthira. Any pure devotee who is constantly conscious of Krishna is naturally very fortunate. The word nilokya, meaning within the material world, indicates that before the Pandavas, there had been many, many devotees, such as the descendants of the Yadu dynasty, and Vasishta, Marichi, Kashyapa, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva, who were all extremely fortunate. The Pandavas, however, were better than all of them, because Krishna himself lived with them constantly. Narada Muni therefore specifically mentioned that within this material world, the Loke, the Pandavas were the most fortunate. And as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that among the Pandavas, I am Arjuna. So, you know, Arjuna's fortune is particularly pronounced. And and we see that, you know, Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to him. And therefore, we understand that the realizations of Arjuna are as significant, at least, as Prahlad Maharaj. So, you know, sort of Prabhupada always, you know, it's a very, you know, significant factor, because you know, there are many persons who study the Vedic literatures. They like to quote Lord Shiva, Parvati, you know, Prahlad, Brahma, Yamaraj. They quote them to, you know, present Shiva as God. You know, we're all God. You know, God is impersonal. They're quite these different personalities. But here what we're seeing, that then if you take the highest authority amongst them all, and you come to Arjuna, his word will be final. Because you see that there is no one more fortunate than Arjuna, and that Krishna, the personality of God, who was living, you know, with Arjuna, and he was, you know, his very, very dear friend. So Arjuna's realization is, you know, comparable with all the great authorities, and even ultimately most substantial, because he was a personal friend of Krishna, and he accepted Krishna as a personality of God. So that you know, it's an ultimate Vedic authority coming from Arjuna. Mm. But generally people don't draw that conclusion, but they, you know, here it's being pointed out how we should draw those conclusions. In the next verse, the impersonal Brahman is Krishna himself, because Krishna is the source of the impersonal Brahman. He is the origin of the transcendental bliss sought by great saintly persons. Yet he, the supreme person, is your most dear friend and constant well-wisher, and is intimately related to you as the son of your maternal uncle. Indeed, he is always like your body and soul. He is worshipable, and yet he acts as your servant and sometimes as your spiritual master. Well, there is always a difference of opinion about the absolute truth. One class of transcendentalists concludes that the absolute truth is impersonal, and another class concludes the absolute truth is a person. In Bhagavad Gita, the absolute truth is accepted as the supreme person. Indeed, that Supreme Person Himself, Lord Krishna, instructs in Bhagavad Gita, Brahmano hi patishtaham mataha parataram nanya. The impersonal Brahman is my partial manifestation, and there is no truth superior to me. That same Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, acted as the supreme friend and relative of the Pandavas, and sometimes he even acted as their servant by carrying a letter from the Pandavas to Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. Because Krishna was a well-wisher of the Pandavas, he also acted as guru by becoming the spiritual master of Arjuna. Arjuna accepted Krishna as his spiritual master. Sishyastiham sarivamitam prapanam. And Krishna sometimes chastised him. For example, the Lord said, Shachanavasachastam bhagyavadam stivasya said, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. The Lord also said, Kitastha kasmalam yidam visham pastitam. My dear Arjuna, how these impurities come upon you? Such was the intimate relationship between the Pandavas and Krishna. In the same way, a pure devotee of the Lord is always with Krishna through thick and thin. His way of life is Krishna. This is a statement of the authority of Sri Narada Muni. So, we've heard these pastimes and of Prahlad Maharaj, and naturally, as being pointed out here, you know, one naturally thinks, oh, we can never come to the standard of, you know, devotional services as Prahlad Maharaj. So Narada Muni is encouraging Yudhisthira that you're already on that very fortunate platform. Don't be discouraged like that. But, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, you know, that he is speaking, Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, because he's his dear friend. Let's see, 18th chapter. Okay, there are a couple of different. Oh, yeah, yeah. So, verse 65, 18th chapter 55. He says, Manmana babamad bhakto majjimam namaskaru, mama vaishasi satyam te padijane piyosimi. Always think of me and become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. Right, now, these are the central teachings of Prahlad Maharaj as well. Don't take the other Vedic processes. Just become Krishna's devotee. That's what Prahlad is teaching. And think of him with bhakti, with devotion, and worship him, not others. Then you will come to him without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. So then in the purport, Prabhupada says, and the Lord's promise is that anyone who is in such a pure Krishna consciousness will certainly return to the abode of Krishna, where he will be engaged in the association of Krishna face to face. So Prahlad Maharaj was in the association of the Lord face to face. This confidential part of knowledge is spoken to Arjuna because he is a dear friend of Krishna. Everyone who follows the path of Arjuna can become a dear friend to Krishna and attain the same perfection as Arjuna. So, you know, what Narada Muni is assuring to Yudhisthira, Srila Prabhupada is giving the same assurance to everyone. Everyone who follows, if we follow Prahlad, if we follow Yudhisthira, Arjuna, then we can attain the same perfection as Prahlad and the same perfection. Everyone can have that. Like that. But naturally, you know, we feel that, you know, how is that possible for someone like myself to come? But there is a statement in Bhagavad Gita, every single one here, everyone in this room, can attain the same perfection as Arjuna and Prahlad Maharaj. It's quite a big statement, isn't it? And, by following the same path. What is a path? Arjuna wasn't a Vedantist. You know, he wasn't a yogi, a sannyasi, you know, in those senses, a stanga yogi. He was a bhakti yogi. He was a yogi in the sense that he always kept a relationship with the Supreme Lord. Person, but according to his capacity, he used his particular abilities from where he was in life in the service of Krishna as an offering of friendship and love. No. Prahlad Maharaj did the same thing. So Arjuna didn't have to follow some Vedic process to get some qualification to attain some stage of perfection. Simply, whatever he was doing at that time, offer that in the service of Krishna. Prahlad the same. Prahlad was a little 5-year-old boy. And they, you know, the demigods pushed him forward. You know, you offer, you pacify the Lord, you please the Lord. And Prahlad was thinking that, you know, there is no material qualification by which one can please the Lord. So he offers all those different references. You know. But then, you know, he quotes, but by bhakti, one can. So he was considering that I don't need any material qualification because the Lord is full in himself. He's complete. So he's not expecting any material qualification from me. I have no fear. And yet, you know, he says in the Gita that he will accept a leaf, fruit, flower. The Lord, according to the pure devotees, Narada Muni, is accepting love. You know, we cannot offer him anything material. I can love the Lord. I can, you know. So Prahlad just stepped forward, and he wasn't expecting to have any, wonderful poetic, you know, beautifully Sanskrit composed prayers. He was thinking that I'll just speak with love. What I can, and the Lord is so wonderful that He will accept that. Krishna said to Arjuna, "Every endeavor is covered by some sort of fault, just as smoke is, you know, fire is covered by smoke." Yes, Arjuna, you know, teachers will be killed. There's some fault. In killing, but still, despite that, if you offer your activities despite any fault to the personality of Godhead with love in an authorized way, they'll be accepted and the fault will not be considered. And Prahlad accepted the same principle. That, you know, I'm just a little boy. There'll be so much fault in what I say, what I do.
Even though you say Prahlad is a little small boy and he's just praying with love, Prahlad Maharaj's prayers are highly philosophical and it's just on a different level.
Yeah, so, but Prahlad, he was encouraged,
mm.
you know, that, you know, he knew from, you know, hearing from the authorities, the Lord's not asking you for any material qualifications. I don't have any material. In fact, you know, I'm disqualified. I'm taking a low birth. But he understood that the Lord will accept our love. You know, the Lord is so kind and wonderful that, you know, that the personality of Godhead has expanded himself in unlimited different living entities, the Vibhanamsa, the Jivas, to expand his enjoyment on the transcendental platform by increasing the variety unlimitedly. So actually God wants it, Prabhupada says. Actually God wants us to love him, and it increases his transcendental bliss on the spiritual platform. So Prahlad understood all these things, that for the pleasure of the Lord, the Lord has so many wonderful devotees like that, and to increase his pleasure, he's even wanting me, you know, just for a little variety. Here's humble little Prahlad, I can say something like that. The Lord likes his variety. And, you know, in fact, he wants it, so therefore I will offer him like that. But the Lord did touch him on his head, so that, you know, Prahlad was also able to offer. His intention was just to speak in love. And just to glorify the Lord to the best of his ability. But because the Lord had touched him on his head, those prayers were highly philosophical.
Mm.
But, you know, Prahlad's intention was not to speak some highly philosophical, discourse. His prayer was, whatever I can say in love, I'll say. And, but because the Lord had touched him, then those highly philosophical prayers did come forth. Yeah. So, like that, you know, we follow in the footsteps of Arjun and Prahlad, that, you know, there is, the Lord is not in need of anything, and if he's asking for us to serve him, it's simply because, as Prabhupada puts it, we have forgotten how to love God. And therefore, for our benefit, God is asking, you give a little something and let's see if some love can come. Like that. I was talking to a man today when I did a ceremony in the morning. I explained this principle. There's a little kid there, he's probably about 5 or 6 years old. And I said, oh, we need some bananas to put in the fire. So they brought out a whole box, and I said, I just need one. And I said to the little boy, do you think God is hungry? He wants all these bananas, you think he's hungry? Yeah. I said, oh, God's a poor man, he's got no money, he can't get his own bananas. And then he started to think, oh, that doesn't make sense, you know. I said, God, the husband of God is a fortune, he's got no money, he can't afford bananas, we have to give him to? No. I said, so why are we giving the bananas? Why are we giving some food? And he thought about it. He said, because it's nice for God? I said, that's right. And then the father said to me, he said, actually, my son, because I explained, I said, you know, sometimes the father asks, you know, for the son to give something, even though what the son has given is actually what the father given, you know, to him. And the father said, actually, the son gave the father some money to buy that house.
Mm.
And I said, where did he get the money? He said, I gave it to him. And then, you know, they both immediately understood, you know, that, the father accepted it, his own money back, because he was getting some love from the son, and the son understood. And I said, you know, the interesting thing here is that, you know, this little boy understands that. He understands the essence of the Gita. He's about 5 or 6 years old. And he understands God's a person. He doesn't need anything. But if we give something to him, he'll like it because we're giving him some love. And I was saying that, you know, the philosophers in India are studying the Gita for centuries and they can't come to that understanding. And yet if there's a little bhakti, immediately that little child can understand what these great philosophers and Sanskrit scholars cannot understand. Right in front of our eyes, can't they? So, therefore, you know, and it was with this, you know, transcendental vision that Prabhupada went all over the world. You know, he ended up in, you know, speaking this same philosophy. He actually, in the early days, 1968, he was actually preaching from, you know, this chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, even then. And the books weren't even published, but he was preaching. He was preaching from this before the books were published because it was so pertinent. He was telling them, you don't need any qualification. If you want to love God, you simply, if you want to do that, then you're qualified and everything will come. So they're thinking, oh, good, 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 like this, you know. So then he preached that message all over. So people were thinking, well, you know, I don't have any qualification, but here, I'll give a flower, I'll give some money, you know, I'll bring some toilet paper, you know, I'll clean the floor, you know, I'll cook something like that. And they, you know, and it is these essential verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam that people picked up, oh, yes. And that spread the Krishna consciousness movement like that. That anyone from any platform, you know, all over the world, they're just in Prahlad's position. And they followed in Prahlad's footsteps. Okay, then all I got to do is show a little bit of love, a little bit of friendship to, you know, that's my only qualification. And Krishna's so kind, although he's God, he will accept it. And they accepted that philosophy. And yet, the scholars, as we're hearing here, all over, you know, from India and or whether they study the Sanskrit in Germany or this one, they cannot understand that. So following in the footsteps of Prahlad and following in the footsteps of Arjuna is very simple. It just means, you know, yes, I would like to show the love for God. Done. Very, very simple. And the Lord immediately accepts it and then immediately become qualified. As Prahlad gives the example that, you know, you offer to the person and then the reflection in the mirror is automatically... gains the benefit. So it's not for God's benefit, but it's for our benefit. Any questions or comments? So verse 50, exalted person like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma could not properly describe the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. May the Lord, who is always worshipped, as the protector of all devotees and great saints, who observe vows of silence, meditation, devotional service and renunciation, be pleased with us. So, in the purport again, the absolute truth is sought by different persons in different ways, yet he remains inconceivable. Nonetheless, devotees like the Pandavas, the Gopis, the cowherd boys, Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan do not need to practice conventional processes of meditation to attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for he remains with them through thick and thin. Therefore, a saint like Narada, understanding the difference between transcendentalists and pure devotees, always prays that the Lord would be pleased with him. And here we see that very same concept of the Lord, you know, invoking our love, and then especially in the pastimes of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, he demonstrates that very, very strongly, that, you know, it is their love by which I remain with them always in very intimate association. And even for the gopis, I remain indebted to them. And I am more... This is what I'm actually attracted to. Not all the ritualistic ceremonies and, you know, austerities and, formalities of the Vedas. You know, the awe and reverence something like that. These things are all good, but what I'm really attracted to is this, you know, love. That is what captures me. So, and as it describes here, you know, exalted person like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma could not properly describe the truth. One may think, Prahlad might think, I cannot, you know, describe Krishna. So what is my fault? Nor can Shiva, nor can Brahma, nor can Ananta Sesha. Is there some fault that I cannot describe fully Krishna? Who can describe Krishna? He is unlimited. You know, so why, you know, we might say, oh, let us leave the prayers to God up to those who can describe him completely and fully.
Mm.
Well, who is that person? My dear King Yudhisthira, long, long ago in history, a demon known as Mayadhanava, who was very expert in technical knowledge, reduced the reputation of Lord Shiva. In that situation, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, saved Lord Shiva. So we've just described how even personalities like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they are also worshipping Krishna and they fail to understand his greatness. So, you know, there, compared to Krishna, there is no true superior to Krishna. Therefore, we're hearing this pastime, even of Lord Shiva. Let us see how, you know, Lord Krishna is worshipable even for Lord Shiva. He is worshipable for everyone. No one can understand Krishna's glories fully. Everyone can simply offer their glorification and their service to the Lord according to their capacity, and the Lord accepts the loving reciprocation, and therefore no one is disqualified for that. Mayadhanava, the great leader of the demons, prepared three invisible residences and gave them to the demons. These dwellings resembled airplanes made of gold, silver and iron, and they contained uncommon paraphernalia. My dear King Yudhisthira, because of these three dwellings, the commanders of the demons remain invisible to the demigods. Taking advantage of this opportunity, the demons, remembering their former enmity, began to vanquish the three worlds, the upper, middle and lower planetary systems. Thereafter, when the demons had begun to destroy the higher planetary systems, the rulers of those planets went to Lord Shiva, fully surrendered unto him, and said, "My dear Lord, we demigods living in the three worlds are about to be vanquished. Will your followers kindly save us?" The most powerful and able, Lord Shiva, reassured them and said, "Do not be afraid." He then fixed his arrows and his bow and released them toward the three residences occupied by the demons. The arrows released by Lord Shiva appeared like fiery beams emanating from the sun globe and covered the three residential airplanes, which could then no longer be seen. Attacked by Lord Shiva's golden arrows, all the demoniac inhabitants of those three dwellings lost their lives and fell down. Then the great mystic Mayadhanava dropped the demons into a nectarian well that he had created. When the dead bodies of the demons came in touch with the nectar, their bodies became invincible to thunderbolts, endowed with great strength. They got up like lightning, penetrating clouds. Lord Shiva, very much aggrieved and disappointed, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, seeing Lord Shiva very much aggrieved and disappointed, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, considered how to stop this nuisance created by Mayadhanava. Then Lord Brahma became a calf and Lord Vishnu a cow, and at noon they entered the residences and drank all the nectar in the well. The demons could see the calf and cow, but because of the illusion created by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demons could not forbid them. The great mystic Mayadhanava became aware that the calf and cow were drinking the nectar, and he could understand this to be the unseen power of providence. Thus he spoke to the demons who were grievously lamenting. Mayadhanava said, "What has been destined by the Supreme Lord for oneself, for others, or for both oneself and others, cannot be undone anywhere or by anyone, whether one be a demigod, a demon, a human being, or anyone else." Narada Muni continued, "Thereafter, Lord Krishna, by his own personal potency consisting of religion, knowledge, renunciation, opulence, austerity, education, and activities, equipped Lord Shiva with all the necessary paraphernalia, such as a chariot, a charioteer, a flag, horses, elephants, a bow, a shield, and arrows. When Lord Shiva was fully equipped in this way, he sat down on the chariot with his arrows and bow to fight with the demons." "My dear Yudhisthira, the most powerful Lord Shiva joined the arrows to his bow, and at noon he set fire to all three residences of the demons and thus destroyed them. Seated on their airplanes in the sky, the inhabitants of the higher planetary systems beat many kettle drums. The demigods, saints, Peters, Siddhas, and various great personalities showered flowers on the head of Lord Shiva, wishing him all victory, and the apsaras began to chant and dance with great pleasure. O King Yudhisthira, thus Lord Shiva is known as Triparari, the annihilator of the three dwellings of the demons, because he burnt these dwellings to ashes. Being worshipped by the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva returned to his own abode. The Lord Sri Krishna appeared as a human being, yet he performed many uncommon and wonderful pastimes by his own potency. How can I say more about his activities than what has already been said by great saintly persons? Everyone can become purified by his activities simply by hearing about them from the right source, purport. Bhagavad Gita and all the Vedic literatures fully explain that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, appears in human society as an ordinary human being but acts very uncommonly for the well-being of the entire world. One should not be influenced by the illusory energy and think Lord Krishna to be an ordinary human being. Those who really seek the absolute truth come to the understanding that Krishna is everything. Vasudeva Savamiti. Such great souls are very rare. Nonetheless, if one studies the entire Bhagavad Gita as it is, Krishna is very easy to understand. The Krishna consciousness movement is just trying to make Krishna known all over the world as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. If people take this movement seriously, their lives as human beings will be successful. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Prahlad, the Best Among the Devotees. Well, good. We'll leave it there. Yeah. Might just have an earlier class this week. Yeah. Any questions, comments?
It looks like the next section is going to start.
Yeah. So we'll leave it there. We won't venture into that just yet.
Yeah.
We might just finish early. Basically, next week we'll have a discussion.
On the next section, or the
We'll have a discussion about the essays and an exam and things like that.
Yeah, that's right. After this, you said you will.
Yeah. I was going to do it this week, and then I realized that there was still a little section of chapter 10, you know, because in the next book. So I thought we'll finish that off. And my wife has been a bit ill. She has got paralysis of the left side of the face. It just sort of come on one time when we were doing a ceremony about a couple of weeks ago, and she just come up to me and she said, "Look at my face," and you know, half her face is just completely paralysed. Anyway, we weren't sure whether it was a tumour or something, but we found out yesterday it was Bell's palsy, so you know, which is treatable. That'll take some time, but she'd been in and out of hospital, you know, getting all sorts of tests, so that sort of create a little bit of a delay. So next week we'll have a chat about what we've done in these chapters, and what we've done also, you know, Bhakti Vaibhava and all that as well. We can get up to date, and then where we proceed from here, like that, you know, as far as what we'll do. And so, you know, we'll set ourselves some goals as far as, you know, how we assess, you know, and how we go about that as a class and try and move forward together. You know, do an essay together, you know, prepare for an exam, and look at some of the slokas, you know, a couple of slokas that we can be tested on, and how we'll go about that for everyone's satisfaction. So we'll look at that. We're going. We'll discuss that as well, you know, where we're up to, and you know,
we need to finish.
Anything that needs finishing, that. So we'll you know, we'll answer any questions on that next week. We won't do it this week. Right?
And this section, next section is not very big, right? Or is it?
Well, this next section, it finishes, you know, the seventh canto, of course, because, you know, there's Prahlad Maharaj's, Narada Muni speaking to Yudhisthira, actually, about, you know, the different... Varnashram system, which is there to help people come to the perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness. You know, Prahlad, of course, is ruling the world for 36,000 years, and you know, how did he rule the world? Well, he ruled the world based upon the Devi Varnashram.
Mm.
So we're going to hear about, you know, that. But also within that, you know, the opportunities to actually bring people to Krishna consciousness is, you know, what the whole Devi Varnashram is about. So we go up to chapter 15, and that finishes this canto. So there's five chapters. And they're quite easy to understand, and it will depend a little bit as to whether we get too bogged down with some of the technicalities of how, you know, Varnashram itself. You know, we get too many long discussions, maybe too long discussions on Varnashram itself, which I don't want to. You know, I want the main understanding to be there, but I would like to, you know, push forward. And then, you know, at the end of that will be another unit done. Like that. So two units in this book. We're 2 units, 7, 8, 9, 6 units, 10, you probably get 6 units, that's 12, something like that.
8 is a little smaller, like in the sense, Gajendra
Pasta. Yeah, 8.
Later is a bit.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, 8 and 9. Very, very, very light. Go through very quick. So.
Are we planning to start 8?
What's that?
Are we planning to start 8 this year?
Oh yeah, if as I say, if we don't get too bogged down in the technicalities of Anushram, then you know. So we want to really understand how, as Prabhupada very expertly does, you know, what we accept in ISKCON for society as a whole and for our own personal spiritual life, what we accept and what we reject. We want to just have a good understanding of that and sort of move on. But we'll go as far as we can with that.
So next week is not revision, right?
Next week is...
exam
tenor? Next week what we'll do is we'll have a discussion on, you know, what the exam and everything will and the essays and that will be and how we'll go about what we need to do and how we'll achieve that very quickly, but together. I'd like everyone to sort of do it together rather than sort of move on and half's done it and half's not.
Most of the devotees have done the Bhakti Vaibhav thing, or?
Yeah, there's a couple. So then that's another thing. Oh. You know, there's a couple who I've got to see, and I may have to see them during the week. But we'll discuss all that next week. We want to. Finally finish up on that one as well. Alright, so let's leave it there and we'll discuss all of that. So really next week is a discussion, but it's very important that everyone's here because we've really pushed forward as far as, you know, some people are in India, some people are here, some people are there. You know, we're in the middle of winter. Everyone should now be here, you know. I mean, generally everyone's here in the middle of winter. You know, they're not sort of gone away. And I'd like the opportunity, while everyone's here, to really, okay, we've gone as far as we can. Now we really just want to tidy everything up. And at the same time, you know, within the classes, if we're satisfied, okay, we got a good understanding, then we'll, you know, keep reading through as well, because there is a lot of reading in this one and you know, some discussion. So we will have, each week there'll be, you know, some readings and discussion, but we do need to have a little bit of housekeeping as well. But it won't be all housekeeping, you know, so we'll get through as much as the chapters, something significant each week. And at the same time, from here, we're also going to literally, you know, make sure that all the what we have to do to, you know, officially, keep everyone up to date with the marking. All right then. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
So very important if everyone can be here for that discussion.